Chapter 5. The tide was far out when David Bourne woke, and the sun was bright on the beach, and the sea was a dark blue. The hills showed green and new washed, and the clouds had gone from the mountains. Catherine was still sleeping, and he looked at her and watched her regular breathing and the sun on her face and thought, how strange that the sun on her eyes should not wake her. After he had taken a shower and brushed his teeth and shaved, he was hungry for breakfast, but he pulled on a pair of shorts and a sweater and found his notebook and pencils and the sharpener and sat at the table by the window that looked out over the estuary of the river to Spain. He started to write, and he forgot about Catherine and what he saw from the window, and the writing went by itself, as it did with him when he was lucky. He wrote it exactly, and the sinister part only showed as the light feathering of a smooth swell on a calm day marking the reef beneath. When he had worked for a time, he looked at Catherine, still sleeping, her lips smiling now in the rectangle of sunlight from the open window, falling across the brown of her body and lighting her dark face and tawny head against the rumpled white of the sheet and the unused pillow. It's too late to get breakfast now, he thought. I'll leave a note and go down to the cafe and get a cafe creme and something. But while he was putting his work away, Catherine woke and came over to him as he was closing the suitcase and put her arms around him and kissed him on the back of his neck and said, I'm your lazy, naked wife. What did you wake up for?
I don't know, but tell me where you're going and I'll be there in 5 minutes.
I'm going to the cafe to get some breakfast.
Go ahead and I'll join you. You worked, didn't you?
Sure.
Weren't you wonderful, too, after yesterday and everything? I'm so proud. Kiss me and look at us in the mirror on the bathroom door.
He kissed her, and they looked into the full-length mirror.
It's so nice not to feel overdressed, she said. You be good and don't get in any trouble on your way to the cafe. Order me an œuf au jambon, too. Don't wait for me. I'm sorry I made you wait so long for breakfast.
At the cafe, he found the morning paper and the Paris papers of the day before and had his coffee and milk and the Bayonne ham with a big, beautifully fresh egg that he ground coarse pepper over sparsely and spread a little mustard on before he broke the yolk. When Catherine had not come and her egg was in danger of getting cold, he ate it too, swabbing the flat dish clean with a piece of the fresh-baked bread.
Here comes Madame, the waiter said. I'll bring another plat for her.
She had put on a skirt and cashmere sweater and pearls and toweled her head, but combed it damp and straight and wet, and the tawny color of her hair did not show to make the contrast with her incredibly darkened face.
It's such a beautiful day, she said. I'm sorry to be late.
Where are you dressed for?
Biarritz. I thought I'd drive in. Do you want to come?
You want to go alone?
Yes, she said, but you're welcome.
As he stood, she said,
I'm going to bring you back a surprise.
No, don't.
Yes, and you'll like it.
Let me go along and keep you from doing anything crazy.
No, it's better if I do it alone. I'll be back in the afternoon, and don't wait for lunch.
David read the papers and then walked out through the town looking for chalets that might be for rent, or for part of the town that might be good to live in, and found the newly built-up area pleasant but dull. He loved the view across the bay and the estuary to the Spanish side, and the old gray stone of Fuenterrabia, and shining white of the houses that spread out from it, and the brown mountains with the blue shadows. He wondered why the storm had gone so quickly, and thought it must have been only the northern edge of a storm that came in across the Bay of Biscay. Biscay was Vizcaya, but that was the Basque province, further down the coast, well beyond San Sebastian. The mountains that he saw beyond the roofs of the border town of Irún were in Guipúzcoa, and beyond them would be Navarra, and Navarra was Navarre. And what are we doing here, he thought. And what am I doing walking through a beach resort town looking at newly planted magnolias and bloody mimosas and watching for to-rent signs on phony Basque villas? You didn't work hard enough this morning to make your brain that stupid, or are you just hungover from yesterday? You didn't work at all, really.
And you better soon, because everything's going too fast, and you're going with it. And you'll be through before you ever know it. Maybe you're through now. All right, don't start. At least you remember that much. And he walked on through the town, his vision sharpened by spleen and tempered by the ash beauty of the day. The breeze from the sea was blowing through the room, and he was reading with his shoulders and the small of his back against two pillows and another folded behind his head. He was sleepy after lunch, but he felt hollow with waiting for her, and he read and waited. Then he heard the door open and she came in, and for an instant he did not know her. She stood there with her hands below her breasts on the cashmere sweater and breathing as though she had been running. "Oh no," she said. "No." Then she was on the bed pushing her head against him saying, "No, no, please, David, don't you at all?" He held her head close against his chest and felt it smooth, close-clipped, and coarsely silky, and she pushed it hard against him again and again. "What did you do, devil?" She raised her head and looked at him, and her lips pressed against his, and she moved them from side to side and moved on the bed so her body was pressed against his. "Now I can tell," she said. "I'm so glad. It was such a big chance. I'm your new girl now, so we'd better find out." "Let me see." "I'll show you, but let me go a minute." She came back and stood by the bed with the sun on her through the window. She had dropped the skirt and was barefoot, wearing only the sweater and the pearls. "Take a good look," she said, "because this is how I am." He took a good look at the long, dark legs, the straight, standing body, the dark face, and the sculptured, tawny head. And she looked at him and said, "Thank you." "How did you do it?"
"Can I tell you in bed?"
"If you tell me in a hurry."
"No, not in a hurry. Let me tell. First I had the idea on the road somewhere after Aix-en-Provence. At Nîmes, when we were walking in the garden, I think. But I didn't know how it would work, or how to tell them how to do it. Then I thought it out, and yesterday I decided."
David stroked his hand over her head from her neck, over the top of her head to her forehead.
"Let me tell," she said. "I knew they must have good coiffures in Biarritz because of the English. So when I got there, I went to the best place and I told the coiffeur that I wanted it all brushed forward. And he brushed it and it came down to my nose and I could hardly see through it. And I said I wanted it cut like a boy when he would first go to public school. He asked me what school, so I said Eton or Winchester because they were the only schools I could remember, except rugby, and I didn't want rugby, certainly. He said, which? So I said Eton, but forward all the way. So after he was finished, and I looked like the most attractive girl who ever went to Eton, I just had him keep on shortening it until Eton was all gone, and then I had him keep on shortening it. Then he said very severely, 'That is not an Eton crop, mademoiselle.' And I said I didn't want an Eton crop, monsieur. That was the only way I knew how to explain what I wanted. And it is madame, not mademoiselle. So then I had him shorten it some more, and then I kept him shortening it. And it is either wonderful or terrible. You don't mind it on my forehead. When it was Eton, it fell in my eye. It's wonderful. Softly classic, she said. But it feels like an animal. Feel it.
He felt it.
Don't worry about it being too classic, she said. My mouth balances it. Now can we make love?
She bent her head forward, and he pulled the sweater over her head and down off her arms and bent over her neck to unhook the safety clasp.
No, leave them.
She lay back on the bed, her brown legs tight together and her head against the flat sheet, the pearl slanted away from the dark rise of her breasts. Her eyes were shut and her arms were by her sides. She was a new girl, and he saw her mouth was changed too. She was breathing very carefully, and she said,
"You do everything. From the beginning. From the very beginning."
"Is this the beginning?"
"Oh, yes." "And don't wait too long." "No, don't wait."
In the night she lay curled around him with her head below his chest and stroked it softly across him from one flank to another, and then came up to put her lips on his and put her arms around him and said, "You're so lovely and loyal when you are asleep, and you didn't wake and didn't wake. I thought you wouldn't, and it was lovely. You were so loyal to me. Did you think it was a dream? Don't wake. I'm going to sleep, but if I don't, I'll be a wild girl. She stays awake and takes care of you. You sleep and know I'm here. Please sleep." In the morning when he woke, there was the lovely body that he knew close against him, and he looked and saw the waxed wood dark shoulders and neck, and the fair tawny head close and smooth lying as a small animal, and he shifted down in the bed and turned toward her and kissed her forehead, with her hair under his lips, and then her eyes, and then gently her mouth. "I'm asleep."
"So was I."
"I know. Feel how strange. All night it was wonderful how strange."
"Not strange."
"Say so if you want. Oh, we fit so wonderfully. Can we both go to sleep?"
"Do you want to be asleep?"
"Us both asleep."
"I'll try."
"Are you asleep?"
"No."
"Please try."
"I'm trying."
"Well, shut your eyes then. How can you sleep if you won't shut your eyes?"
"I like to see you in the morning, all new and strange."
"Was I good to invent it?"
"Don't talk."
"It's the only way to slow things. I have already. Couldn't you tell? Of course you could. Couldn't you tell now and now and now, like our hearts beating together? It is the same, I know. It's only that that counts, but we don't count. It's so lovely and so good and lovely."
She came back to the big room and went to the mirror and sat and brushed her hair, looking at herself critically.
"Let's have breakfast in bed," she said. "And can we have champagne if it's not wicked? In the Brut, they have Lanson and Perrier Jouet of the good. May I ring?"
"Yes," he said, and went under the shower. Before he put it on full force, he could hear her voice on the telephone. When he came out, she was sitting back very formally against two pillows, with all the pillows neatly shaken out, and placed two and two at the head of the bed.
"Do I look all right with my head wet?"
"It's just damp. You dried it with a towel."
"I can cut it shorter on the forehead. I can do that myself, or you can."
"I'd like it if it came over your eyes."
"Maybe it will," she said. "Who knows, maybe we'll get tired of being classical. And today we'll stay on the beach all through noon. We'll go way far down it, and we can tan, really, when the people all come in for lunch. And then we'll ride to Saint-Jean to eat when we're hungry at the Bar Basque. But first you'll make us go to the beach, because we need to."
"Good." David moved a chair over and put his hand close on hers, and she looked at him and said,
"2 days ago I understood everything, and then the absinthe made me turn on it."
"I know," David told her. "You couldn't help it."
"But I hurt you about the clippings."
"No," he said. "You tried. You didn't make it."
"I'm so sorry, David. Please believe me."
"Everybody has strange things that mean things to them. You couldn't help it."
"No,"
the girl said and shook her head.
"It's all right then," David said. "Don't cry. It's all right." "I never cry," she said. "But I can't help it."
"I know it, and you're beautiful when you cry."
"No, don't say it. But I never cried before, did I?"
"Never."
"But will it be bad for you if we stay here just 2 days on the beach? We haven't had any chance to swim, and it would be silly to have been here and not to swim. Where are we going to go when we leave here?" "Oh, we haven't decided yet. We'll probably decide tonight or in the morning. Where would you suggest?"
"I think anywhere would be fine," David said.
"Well, maybe that's where we'll go."
"It's a big place."
"It's nice to be alone, though, and I'll pack us nicely."
"There's nothing much to do except put in toilet things and close two bags."
"We can leave in the morning if you want. Truly, I don't want to do anything to you or have any bad effect on you."
The waiter knocked on the door.
"There was no more Perrier Jouet, madame, so I brought the Lanson."
She had stopped crying, and David's hand was still close on hers, and he said, "I know." Chapter 6. They had spent the morning at the Prado and now were sitting at a place in a building with thick stone walls. It was cool and very old. There were wine casks around the walls. The tables were old and thick, and the chairs were worn. The light came from the door. The waiter brought them glasses of manzanilla from the lowland near Cadiz called the Marismas, with thin slices of jamón serrano, a smoky, hard-cured ham from pigs that fed on acorns, and a bright red spicy salchichón, another even spicier dark sausage from a town called Vich, and anchovies and garlic olives. They ate these and drank more of the manzanilla, which was light and nutty-tasting. Catherine had a Spanish-English method book with a green cover on the table close to her hand, and David had a stack of the morning papers. It was a hot day, but cool in the old building, and the waiter asked, "Do you want gazpacho?" He was an old man, and he filled their glasses again. "Do you think the señorita would like it?" "Try her," the waiter said gravely, as though he were speaking of a mare. It came in a large bowl with ice floating, with the slices of crisp cucumber, tomato, garlic bread, green and red peppers, and the coarsely peppered liquid that tasted lightly of oil and vinegar. "It's a salad soup," Catherine said. "It's delicious." "Es gazpacho," the waiter said. They drank Valdepeñas now from a big pitcher, and it started to build with the foundation of the Marismeño, only held back temporarily by the dilution of the gazpacho, which it moved in on confidently. It built solidly. "What is this wine?" Catherine asked. "It's an African wine," David said. "They always say that Africa begins at the Pyrenees," Catherine said. "I remember how impressed I was when I first heard it." "That's one of those easy sayings," David said. "It's more complicated than that. Just drink it." "But how can I tell about where Africa begins if I've never been there? People are always telling you tricky things." "Sure, you can tell. The Basque country certainly wasn't like Africa or anything I ever heard about Africa. Neither is Asturias nor Galicia, but once you're in from the coast, it gets to be Africa fast enough." "But why didn't they ever paint that country?" Catherine asked. "In all the backgrounds, it is always the mountains out by the Escorial." "The Sierra," David said. "Nobody wanted to buy pictures of Castilla the way you saw it. They never did have landscape painters. The painters painted what was ordered. Except Greco's Toledo. It's terrible to have such a wonderful country and no good painters ever paint it," Catherine said. "What should we eat after the gazpacho?" David said. The proprietor, who was a short, middle-aged man, heavily built and square-faced, had come over. "He thinks we ought to have meat of some kind." "Hay solomillo muy bueno," the owner insisted. "No, please," Catherine said. "Just a salad." "Well, at least drink a little wine," the proprietor said, and refilled the pitcher from the spigot of the cask behind the bar. "I shouldn't drink," Catherine said. "I'm sorry I'm talking so much. I'm sorry if I talk stupidly. I usually do." "You talk very interestingly and awfully well for a hot day like this. Does the wine make you talkative?" "It's a different sort of talkative than absinthe," Catherine said. "It doesn't feel dangerous. I started on my good new life, and I'm reading now and looking outward and trying not to think about myself so much, and I'm going to keep it up. But we ought not to be in any town this time of year. Maybe we'll go. The whole way here I saw wonderful things to paint, and I can't paint at all, I never could. But I know wonderful things to write, and I can't even write a letter that isn't stupid. I never wanted to be a painter nor a writer until I came to this country. Now it's just like being hungry all the time, and there's nothing you can ever do about it." "The country is here. You don't have to do anything about it. It's always here. The Prado's here," David said. "There's nothing except through yourself," she said. "And I don't want to die and it be gone. You have every mile we drove. All the yellow country and the white hills and the chaff blowing and the long lines of poplars by the road. You know what you saw and what you felt, and it's yours. Don't you have Le Gros du Roi and Aigues-Mortes and all the Camargue that we rode through on our bikes? This will be the same. But what about when I'm dead?" "Then you're dead." "But I can't stand to be dead." "Then don't let it happen till it happens. Look at things and listen and feel. What if I can't remember?" He had spoken about death as though it did not matter.
She drank the wine and looked at the thick stone walls in which there were only small windows with bars high up that gave onto a narrow street where the sun did not shine. The doorway, though, gave onto an arcade and the bright sunlight on the worn stones of the square.
"When you start to live outside yourself," Catherine said, "it's all dangerous. Maybe I'd better go back into our world, your and my world that I made up. We made up, I mean. I was a great success in that world. It was only 4 weeks ago. I think maybe I will be again."
The salad came, and then there was its greenness on the dark table and the sun on the plaza beyond the arcade. "Do you feel better?" David asked.
"Yes," she said. "I was thinking so much about myself that I was getting impossible again, like a painter, and I was my own picture. It was awful. Now that I'm all right again, I hope it still lasts."
It had rained hard, and now the heat was broken. They were in the cool, shutter-slatted dimness of the big room in the palace, and had bathed together in the deep water in the long, deep tub, and then had turned the plug and let the full force of the water splash and flow over them, swirling as it drained away. They had blotted each other with the huge towels and then come to bed. As they lay on the bed, there was a cool breeze that came through the slats of the blinds and moved over them. Catherine lay propped on her elbows with her chin on her hands.
"Do you think it would be fun if I went back to being a boy again? It wouldn't be any trouble.
I like you the way you are now.
It's sort of tempting. But I shouldn't do it in Spain, I suppose. It's such a formal country.
Stay the way you are."
"What makes your voice be different when you say it?" "I think I'll do it."
"No, not now."
"Thank you for the not now. Should I make love this time as a girl and then do it?"
"You're a girl. You are a girl. You're my lovely girl, Catherine."
"Yes, I am your girl, and I love you, and I love you, and I love you."
"Don't talk."
"Yes, I will. I'm your girl, Catherine, and I love you. Please, I love you. Always, always, always."
"You don't have to keep saying it. I can tell."
"I like to say it, and I have to say it, and I've been a fine girl and a good girl, and I will again. I promise I will again."
"You don't have to say it."
"Oh, yes, I do. I say it, and I said it, and you said it. You now, please. Please, you."
They lay quiet for a long time, and she said,
"I love you so much, and you're such a good husband."
"You blessed."
"Was I what you wanted?"
"What do you think?"
"I hope I was."
"You were."
"I promise truly, and I will, and I'll keep it. Now can I be a boy again?"
"Why?"
"Just for a little while."
"Why?"
"I loved it, and I don't miss it, but I'd like to be again in bed at night if it isn't bad for you. Can I be again, if it's not bad for you?"
"The hell with if it's bad for me."
"Then can I?"
"Do you really want to?"
He had kept from saying have to, so she said, "I don't have to, but please, if it's all right, can I, please?"
"All right." He kissed her and held her to him.
"Nobody can tell which way I am but us. I'll only be a boy at night and won't embarrass you. Don't worry about it, please."
"All right, boy."
"I lied when I said I didn't have to. It came so suddenly today."
He shut his eyes and did not think, and she kissed him, and it had gone further now, and he could tell and feel the desperateness.
"Now you change, please. Don't make me change you, must I?" "All right, I will." "You're changed now."
"You are.
You did it too. You are. You did it too. I did it to you, but you did it. Yes, you did. You're my sweet, dearest, darling Catherine. You're my sweet, my lovely Catherine. You're my girl, my dearest, only girl. Oh, thank you, my girl."
She lay there a long time, and he thought that she had gone to sleep. Then she moved away very slowly, lifting herself lightly on her elbows, and said,
"I have a wonderful surprise for myself tomorrow. I'm going to the Prado in the morning and see all the pictures as a boy."
"I give up," David said. Chapter 7. In the morning, he got up while she was still sleeping and went out to the bright early morning freshness of the high plateau air. He walked in the street up the hill to the Plaza Santa Ana and had breakfast at a cafe and read the local papers. Catherine had wanted to be at the Prado at 10 when it opened, and before he left, he had set the alarm to wake her at 9. Outside on the street, walking up the hill, he had thought of her sleeping. The beautiful, rumpled head that looked like an ancient coin lying against the white sheet, the pillow pushed away, the upper sheet showing the curves of her body. It lasted a month, he thought, or almost. And the other time, from Le Gros du Roi to Andai, was 2 months. No, less, because she started thinking of it in Nîmes. It wasn't 2 months. We've been married 3 months and 2 weeks, and I hope I can make her happy always. But in this, I do not think anybody can take care of anybody. It's enough to stay in it. The difference is that she asked this time, he told himself. She did ask. When he had read the papers and then paid for his breakfast and walked out into the heat that had come back to the plateau when the wind had changed, he made his way to the cool, formal, sad politeness of the bank, where he found mail that had been forwarded from Paris. He opened and read mail while he waited through the lengthy, many-windowed formalities of cashing a draft which had been sent from his bank to this, their Madrid correspondent. Finally, with the heavy notes buttoned into his jacket pocket, he came out into the glare again and stopped at the newsstand to buy the English and American papers that had come in on the morning Sud Express. He bought some bullfight weeklies to wrap the English-language papers in, and then walked down the Carrera San Jeronimo to the cool, friendly morning gloom of the Buffet Italianos. There was no one in the place yet, and he remembered that he had made no rendezvous with Catherine. "What will you drink?" the waiter asked him. "Beer," he said.
"This isn't a beer place."
"Don't you have beer?"
"Yes, but it's not a beer place."
"Up yours," he said, and re-rolled the papers and went out, and walked across the street and back on the other side to turn to the left into the Calle Vittoria and onto the Cervecería Alvarez. He sat at a table under the awning in the passageway and drank a big cold glass of the draft beer. The waiter was probably only making conversation, he thought. And what the man said was quite true. It isn't a beer place. He was just being literal. He wasn't being insolent. That was a very bad thing to say, and he had no defense against it. It was a shitty thing to do. He drank a second beer and called the waiter to pay.
"Y la señora," the waiter said. "At the Museo del Prado. I'm going to get her."
"Well, until you get back," the waiter said. He walked back to the hotel by a downhill shortcut. The key was at the desk, so he rode up to their floor and left the papers and the mail on a table in the room and locked most of the money in his suitcase. The room was made up and the shutters were lowered against the heat so that the room was darkened. He washed and then sorted through his mail and took 4 letters out and put them in his hip pocket. He took the Paris editions of the New York Herald, the Chicago Tribune, and the London Daily Mail down with him to the bar of the hotel, stopping at the desk to leave the key and to ask the clerk to tell Madame, when she came in, that he was in the bar. He sat on a stool at the bar and ordered a marismeño, and opened and read his letters while he ate the garlic-flavored olives from the saucer the bartender had placed before him with his glass. One of the letters had 2 cuttings of reviews of his novel from monthly magazines, and he read them with no feeling that they dealt with him or with anything he had written. He put the cuttings back in the envelope. They had been understanding and perceptive reviews, but to him they had meant nothing. He read the letter from the publisher with the same detachment. The book had sold well, and they thought that it might continue selling on into the fall, although nobody could ever tell about such things. Certainly, so far, it had received an extraordinarily fine critical reception, and the way would be open for his next book. It was a great advantage that this was his second and not his first novel. It was tragic how often first novels were the only good novels American writers had in them. But this, his publisher went on, his second, validated all the promise his first had shown. It was an unusual summer in New York,
cold and wet.
Oh, Christ, David thought.
The hell with how it was in New York, and the hell with that thin-lipped bastard Coolidge, fishing for trout in a high stiff collar in a fish hatchery in the Black Hills we stole from the Sioux and the Cheyenne, and bathtub ginned-up writers wondering if their baby does the Charleston. And the hell with that promise he had validated. What promise to whom? To the Dial? To the Bookman? To the New Republic? No. He had shown it. Let me show you my promise that I'm going to validate it. What shit?
Hello, young man, said a voice. What are you looking so indignant about?
Hello, Colonel, David said, and felt suddenly happy. What the hell are you doing here? The Colonel, who had deep blue eyes, sandy hair, and a tanned face that looked as though it had been carved out of flint by a tired sculptor who had broken his chisel on it, picked up David's glass and tasted the marismeño. Bring me a bottle of whatever this young man is drinking to that table, he said to the bartender. Bring a cold bottle. You don't need to ice it. Bring it immediately. Yes, sir, said the bartender. Very good, sir. Come along, the colonel said to David, leading him to the table in the corner of the room. You're looking very well.
So are you.
Colonel John Boyle was wearing a dark blue suit of a cloth that looked stiff but cool, and a blue shirt and black tie. I'm always well, he said. Do you want a job? No, said David.
Just like that? Don't even ask what it is.
His voice sounded as though he had hawked it up out of a dusty throat. The wine came, and the waiter filled two glasses and put down saucers of the garlic olives and of hazelnuts.
No anchovies? The colonel asked. What sort of a funda is this?
The bartender smiled and went for the anchovies.
Excellent wine, the colonel said. First rate. I always hoped your taste would improve.
Now why don't you want a job? You've just finished a book.
I'm on my honeymoon.
Silly expression, the colonel said.
I never liked it. It sounds sticky.
Why didn't you say you've just been married? It makes no difference. You'd be worthless in any event.
What was the job?
No use talking about it now. Who did you marry? Anyone I know?
Catherine Hill.
Knew her father. Very odd type. Killed himself in a car. His wife, too.
I never knew them.
You never knew him?
No.
Strange. But perfectly understandable. He's no loss to you as a father-in-law.
The mother was very lonely, they say.
Stupid way for grown-up people to be killed.
Where did you meet this girl?
In Paris.
She has a silly uncle who lives there. He's really worthless. Do you know him?
I've seen him at the races.
At Longchamp and Auteuil.
How could you help it?
I didn't marry her family.
Of course not.
But you always do, dead or alive.
Not the uncles and aunts.
Well, anyway, have fun.
You know, I like the book.
Has it done well?
It's done pretty well.
It moved me very deeply, the colonel said. You're a deceptive son of a bitch.
So are you, John.
I hope so, the colonel said.
David saw Catherine at the door and stood up. She came over to them, and David said, This is Colonel Boyle.
How do you do, my dear?
Catherine looked at him and smiled and sat down at the table. David watched her, and it seemed as though she were holding her breath.
Are you tired? David asked.
I think so.
Have a glass of this, the colonel said.
Would it be all right if I had an absinthe?
Of course, David said.
I'll have one too.
Not for me, the colonel said to the bartender. This bottle's lost its freshness. Put it back to chill and bring me a glass from a cold bottle.
Do you like the real Pernod? He asked Catherine.
Yes, she said. I'm shy with people, and it helps.
It's an excellent drink, he said. I join you, but I have work I must do after lunch.
I'm sorry I forgot to make a rendezvous, David said. This is very nice. I stopped by for the mail at the bank. There's quite a lot for you. I left it in the room. I don't care about it, she said.
I saw you in the Prado looking at the Grecos, the colonel said.
I saw you too, she said.
Do you always look at pictures as though you owned them and were deciding how to have them rehung properly?
Probably, the colonel said. Do you always look at them as though you were the young chief of a warrior tribe who had gotten loose from his counselors and was looking at that marble of Leda and the Swan? Catherine blushed under her dark tan and looked at David and then at the colonel.
I like you, she said. Tell me some more.
I like you, he said. And I envy David. Is he everything you want? Don't you know? To me, the visible world is visible, the colonel said. Now go on and take another sip of that wormwood-tasting truth serum.
I don't need it now.
Aren't you shy now? Drink it anyway. It's good for you. You're the darkest white girl I've ever seen. Your father was very dark, though.
I must have his skin. My mother was very fair.
I never knew her.
Did you know my father well?
Quite well.
How was he?
He was a very difficult and charming man.
Are you really shy?
Truly.
Ask David.
You get over it awfully quickly.
You rode over it. How was my father?
He was the shyest man I ever knew, and he could be the most charming.
Did he have to use Pernod, too?
He used everything.
Do I remind you of him?
Not at all.
That's good. Does David?
Not in the least.
That's even better. How did you know I was a boy in the Prado?
Why shouldn't you be?
I only started it again last evening. I was a girl for almost a month. Ask David.
You don't need to say, ask David. What are you right now?
A boy, if it's all right with you.
It's fine with me, but you're not.
I just wanted to say it, she said. Now that I said it, I don't have to be it. But it was wonderful in the Prado. That was why I wanted to tell David about it.
You'll have plenty of time to tell David.
Yes, she said. We have time for things.
Tell me why you got so dark, the colonel said. Do you know how dark you are?
That was from the Gros du Roi, and then not far from Lanapool. There was a cove there with a trail that went down to it through the pines. You couldn't see it from the road.
How long did it take to get so dark?
About 3 months.
And what are you going to do with it?
Wear it, she said. It's very becoming in bed.
I shouldn't think you'd want to waste it in town.
The Prada wasn't wasting. I don't really wear it. It's me. I really am this dark. The sun just develops it. I wish I was darker.
You probably will be then, the colonel said. Do you have other things like that to look forward to?
Just every day, Catherine said. I look forward to every day.
And has today been a good one?
Yes, you know it has. You were there.
Will you and David lunch with me?
All right, Catherine said. I'll go up and change. Will you wait for me?
Don't you want to finish your drink? David asked.
I don't care about it, she said. Don't worry about me. I won't be shy.
She walked to the door and they both looked after her. Was I too rough? The colonel asked. I hope not. She's a very lovely girl.
I just hope I'm good for her.
You are. How are you doing yourself?
All right, I think.
Are you happy?
Very.
Remember, everything is right until it's wrong. You'll know when it's wrong.
You think so?
I'm quite sure. If you don't, it doesn't matter. Nothing will matter then.
How fast will it go?
I didn't say anything about speed. What are you talking about?
Sorry.
It's what you have, so have a lovely time.
We do.
So I see. There's only one thing.
What?
Take good care of her.
That's all you've got to tell me?
One small thing more. The get's no good.
There isn't any get yet.
It's kinder to shoot the get.
Kinder?
Better. They talked about people for a while, the colonel speaking outrageously, and then David saw Catherine come through the door wearing a white sharkskin outfit to show how really dark she was. You do really look extraordinarily beautiful, the colonel said to Catherine. but you must try to get darker.
Thank you. I will, she said.
We don't have to go out now in the heat, do we?
Can't we sit here in the cool? We can eat here in the grill.
You're lunching with me, the colonel said.
No, please, you're lunching with us.
David stood up uncertainly. There were more people at the bar now. Looking down at the table, he saw that he had drunk Catherine's drink as well as his own. He did not remember drinking either of them. It was the siesta time, and they lay on the bed, and David was reading by the light that came in the window on the left of the bed, where he had pulled up one of the slatted curtains about a third of its length. The light was reflected from the building across the street. The curtain was not pulled high enough to show the sky.
The colonel liked me being so dark, Catherine said. We must get to the sea again. I have to keep it.
We'll go there whenever you want.
That will be wonderful. Can I tell you something? I have to.
What?
I didn't change back to be a girl for lunch. Did I behave all right?
You didn't?
No. Do you mind? But now I'm your boy, and I'll do anything for you.
David continued reading.
Are you angry?
No. Sobered, he thought.
It's simpler now.
I don't think so.
Then I'll be careful. This morning everything I did felt so right and happy, so clean and good in the daylight. Couldn't I try now and we see?
I'd rather you didn't.
Can I kiss you and try?
Not if you're a boy and I'm a boy. His chest felt as though there were an iron bar inside it from one side to the other.
I wish you hadn't told the colonel. But he saw me, David. He brought it up, and he knew all about it and understood. It wasn't stupid to tell him. It was better. He's our friend. If I told him, he wouldn't talk. If I didn't tell him, he had a right to.
You can't trust all people like that.
I don't care about people. I only care about you. I'd never make scandals with other people.
My chest feels like it is locked in iron.
I'm sorry. Mine feels so happy.
My dearest Catherine.
That's good. You call me Catherine always when you want. I am your Catherine, too. I'm always Catherine when you need her. We'd better go to sleep, or should we start and see what happens?
Let's first lie very quiet in the dark, David said, and lowered the latticed shade, and they lay side by side on the bed in the big room in the palace in Madrid, where Catherine had walked in the Museo del Prado in the light of day as a boy, and now she would show the dark things in the light, and there would, it seemed to him, be no end to the change. Chapter 8. In the Buen Retiro in the morning, it was as fresh as though it was a forest. It was green, and the trunks of the trees were dark, and the distances were all new. The lake was not where it had been, and when they saw it through the trees, it was quite changed.
You walk ahead, she said. I want to look at you.
So he turned away from her and walked to where there was a bench and sat down. He could see a lake at a long distance and knew it was too far to ever walk to. He sat there on the bench, and she sat down beside him and said,
It's all right.
But remorse had been there to meet him in the Retiro, and now it was so bad he told Catherine that he would meet her at the Café of the Palace.
Are you all right? Do you want me to come with you?
No, I'm all right. I just have to go.
I'll see you there, she said.
She looked particularly beautiful that morning, and she smiled at their secret, and he smiled at her, and then took his remorse to the café. He did not think he would make it, but he did. And later, when Catherine came, he was finishing his second absinthe, and the remorse was gone. How are you, devil? He said.
I'm your devil, she said. Could I have one of those, too?
The waiter went away, pleased to see her looking so handsome and so happy, and she said,
What was it?
I just felt rotten, but I feel fine now.
Was it that bad?
No. He lied.
She shook her head. I'm so sorry. I hoped there wouldn't be any bad at all.
It went away.
That's good.
Isn't it lovely to be here in the summer and no one here? I thought of something.
Already?
We can stay on and not go to the sea. This is ours now, the town and here. We could stay here and then drive back straight through to Lanapul.
There aren't many more moves to make.
Don't. We've only just started.
Yes. We can always go back where we started.
Of course we can, and we will.
Let's not talk about it, he said.
He had felt it start to come back, and he took a long sip of his drink.
It's a very strange thing, he said. This drink tastes exactly like remorse. It has the true taste of it, and yet it takes it away.
I don't like you to have to take it for that. We aren't like that. We mustn't be.
Maybe I am.
You mustn't be.
She took a long sip out of her glass and another long sip, and looked around and then at him.
I can do it. Look at me and watch it happen. Here in the outdoor cafe of the palace in Madrid, and you can see the Prado and the street and the sprinklers under the trees, so it's real. It's awfully brusque, but I can do it. You can see. Look. The lips are your girl again, and I'm all the things you really want. Haven't I done it? Tell me.
You didn't have to.
Do you like me as a girl? She said very seriously and then smiled.
Yes, he said.
That's good, she said.
I'm glad someone likes it because it's a goddamn bore.
Don't do it then.
Didn't you hear me say I did it? Didn't you watch me do it? Do you want me to wrench myself around and tear myself in two because you can't make up your mind? Because you won't stay with anything?
Would you hold it down?
Why should I hold it down? You want a girl, don't you? Don't you want everything that goes with it? Scenes, hysteria, false accusations, temperament, isn't that it? I'm holding it down. I won't make you uncomfortable in front of the waiter. I won't make the waiter uncomfortable. I read my damn mail. Can we send up and get my mail?
I'll go up and get it.
No, I shouldn't be here by myself.
That's right, he said.
You see? That was why I said to send for it.
They wouldn't give a botones a key to the room. That was why I said I'd go.
I'm over it, Catherine said. I'm not going to act that way. Why should I act that way to you? It was ludicrous and undignified. It was so silly, I won't even ask you to forgive me. Besides, I have to go up to the room anyway.
Now?
Because I'm a goddamn woman. I thought if I'd be a girl and stay a girl, I'd have a baby at least. Not even that.
That could be my fault.
Don't let's ever talk about faults. You stay here and I'll bring back the mail. We'll read our mail and be nice, good, intelligent American tourists who are disappointed because they came to Madrid at the wrong time of year.
At lunch, Catherine said,
We'll go back to Lanapul. There is no one there, and we'll be quiet and good and work and take care of each other. We can drive to X, too, and see all the Cezanne country. We didn't stay there long enough before.
We'll have a lovely time.
It isn't too soon for you to start to work again, is it?
No. It would be good to start now, I'm sure.
That will be wonderful. And I'll study Spanish, really, for when we come back. And I have so much I have to read.
We have lots to do.
We'll do it, too.
Book 3 Chapter 9 The new plan lasted a little more than a month. They had three rooms at the end of a long, low, rose-colored Provençal house where they had stayed before. It was in the pines on the Estorel side of Lanapul. Out of the windows there was the sea, and from the garden in front of the long house where they ate under the trees, they could see the empty beaches, the high papyrus grass at the delta of the small river, and across the bay was the white curve of Khan, with the hills and the far mountains behind. There was no one staying at the long house now in summer, and the proprietor and his wife were pleased to have them back. Their bedroom was the big room at the end. It had windows on three sides and was cool that summer. At night they smelled the pines and the sea. David worked in a room at the further end. He started early each morning, and when he was finished,
he would find Catherine and they would go to a cove in the rocks where there was a sand beach to sun and to swim. Sometimes Catherine was gone with the car and he would wait for her and have a drink out on the terrace after his work. It was impossible to drink pastis after absinthe, and he had taken to drinking whiskey and Perrier water. This pleased the proprietor, who was now doing a good defensive summer business with the presence of the two Bournes in the dead summer season. He had not hired a cook, and his wife was doing the cooking. One maidservant looked after the rooms, and a nephew, who was an apprentice waiter, served at table. Catherine enjoyed driving the small car and went on buying and collecting trips to Cannes and to Nice. The big winter season shops were closed, but she found extravagances to eat and solid values to drink, and located the places where she could buy books and magazines. David had worked very hard for 4 days. They had spent all the afternoon in the sun on the sand of a new cove they had found, and they had been in the water until they were both tired, and then come home in the evening with salt dried on their backs and in their hair to have a drink and take showers and change. In bed, the breeze came in from the sea. It was cool, and they lay side by side in the dark with the sheet over them, and Catherine said, "You said I was to tell you." "I know." She leaned over him and held his head in her hands and kissed him. "I want to so much. Can I? May I?" "Sure." "I'm so happy. I've made a lot of plans," she said. "And this time, I'm not going to start so bad and wild."
"What sort of plans?"
"I can tell, but it would be better to show it. We could do it tomorrow. Will you go in with me?"
"Where?"
"To Cannes, where I went before we were here before. He's a very good coiffeur. We're friends, and he's better than the one in Biarritz because he understood right away."
"What have you been doing?"
"I went to see him this morning while you were working, and I explained, and he studied it and understood and thought it would be fine. I told him I hadn't decided, but that if I did, I'd try to get you to have yours cut the same way."
"How is it cut?"
"You'll see. We'll go together. It's sort of beveled back from the natural line. He's very enthusiastic. I think it's because he's crazy about the Bugatti. Are you afraid?"
"No."
"I can't wait. He wants to lighten it, really, but we were afraid you might not like it."
"The sun and the salt water lighten it."
"Oh, this would be much fairer. He said he could make it as fair as Scandinavian. Think how that would be with our dark skin. And we could make yours lighter, too."
"No, I'd feel funny."
"Who do you know here that makes any difference? You'd get lighter swimming all summer anyway."
He did not say anything, and she said,
"You won't have to. We'll just do mine, and maybe you'll want to. We can see."
"Don't make plans, devil. Tomorrow I'll get up very early and work, and you sleep as late as you can."
"Then write for me, too," she said. "No matter if it's where I've been bad, put in how much I love you."
"I'm nearly up to now."
"Can you publish it, or would it be bad to?"
"I've only tried to write it."
"Can I ever read it?"
"If I ever get it right."
"I'm so proud of it already, and we won't have any copies for sale and none for reviewers, and then there'll never be clippings and you'll never be self-conscious and we'll always have it just for us."
David Bourne woke when it was light and put on shorts and a shirt and went outside. The breeze had died. The sea was calm and the day smelled of the dew and the pines. He walked barefooted across the flagstones of the terrace to the room at the far end of the long house and went in and sat down at the table where he worked. The windows had been open overnight and the room was cool and full of early morning promise. He was writing about the road from Madrid to Zaragoza and the rising and falling of the road as they came at speed into the country of the Red Buttes, and the little car on the then dusty road picked up the express train, and Catherine passed it gently car by car, the tender, and then the engineer and fireman, and finally the nose of the engine, and then she shifted as the road switched left and the train disappeared into a tunnel.
"I had it," she had said, "but it went to ground. Tell me if I can get it again."
He had looked at the Michelin map and said,
"Not for a while.
I'll let it go then and we'll see the country."
As the road climbed, there were poplar trees along the river, and the road climbed steeply, and he felt the car accept it, and then Catherine shift again happily as it flattened the steep grade. Later, when he heard her voice in the garden, he stopped writing. He locked the suitcase with the cahiers of manuscript and went out, locking the door after him. The girl would use the passkey to clean the room. Catherine was sitting at breakfast on the terrace. There was a red and white checked cloth on the table. She wore her old Gros de Roi striped shirt, fresh washed and shrunk now, and much faded new gray flannel slacks and espadrilles.
"Hello," she said. "I couldn't sleep late."
"You look lovely."
"Thank you. I feel lovely."
"Where did you get those slacks?"
"I had them made in Nice by a good tailor. Are they all right?"
"They're very well cut. They just look new. Are you going to wear them into town?"
"Not town. Cannes in the off-season. Everybody will next year. People are wearing our shirts now. They're no good with skirts. You don't mind, do you?"
"Not at all. They look right.
They just looked so well creased."
After breakfast, while David shaved and showered and then pulled on a pair of old flannels and a fisherman's shirt and found his espadrilles, Catherine put on a blue linen shirt with an open collar and a heavy white linen skirt.
"We're better this way. Even if the slacks are right for here, they're too show-off for this morning. We'll save them."
It was very friendly and offhand at the coiffeur's, but very professional. Monsieur Jean, who was about David's age and looked more Italian than French, said,
"I will cut it as she asks. Do you agree, monsieur?"
"I don't belong to the syndicate," David said. "I leave it to you two."
"Perhaps we should experiment on monsieur," Monsieur Jean said, "in case anything goes wrong."
But Monsieur Jean began cutting Catherine's hair very carefully and skillfully, and David watched her dark, serious face above the smock that came close around her neck. She looked into the hand mirror and watched the comb and scissors lifting and snipping. The man was working like a sculptor, absorbed and serious.
"I thought about it all last night and this morning," the coiffeur said. "If you don't believe that, monsieur, I understand, but this is as important to me as your métier is to you."
He stepped back to look at the shape he was making. Then he snipped more rapidly, and finally turned the chair so the big mirror was reflected in the small one Catherine held.
"Do you want it cut that way above the ears?" she asked the coiffeur.
"As you like. I can make it more dégagé if you wish, but it will be beautiful as is if we are going to make it truly fair."
"I want it fair," Catherine said.
He smiled.
"Madame and I have spoken of it, but I said it must be Monsieur's decision."
"Monsieur gave his decision," Catherine said.
"How fair did Monsieur say he wished it to be?"
"As fair as you can make it," she said.
"Don't say that," Monsieur Jean said. "You must tell me."
"As fair as my pearls," Catherine said. "You've seen them plenty of times."
David had come over and was watching Monsieur Jean stir a large glassful of the shampoo with a wooden spoon.
"I have the shampoos made up with a Castile soap," the coiffeur said. "It's warm. Please come over here to the basin. Sit forward," he said to Catherine, "and put this cloth across your forehead."
"But it isn't even really a boy's haircut," Catherine said. "I wanted it the way we planned. Everything's going wrong."
"It couldn't be more a boy's haircut. You must believe me."
He was lathering her head now with the foamy thick shampoo with the acrid odor. When her head had been shampooed and rinsed again and again, it looked to David as though it had no color, and the water tunneled through it, showing only a wet paleness. The coiffeur put a towel over it and rubbed it softly. He was very sure about it.
"Don't be desperate, madame," he said. "Why would I do anything against your beauty?"
"I am desperate, and there isn't any beauty."
He dried her head gently, and then kept a towel over her head, and brought a hand blower and began to play it through her hair as he combed it forward.
"Now watch," he said.
As the air drove through her hair, it was turning from damp drab to a silvery northern shining fairness. As the wind of the blower moved through it, they watched it change.
You shouldn't have despaired, Monsieur Jean said,
not saying Madame, and then remembering.
Madame wanted it fair?
It's better than the pearls, she said. You're a great man, and I was terrible.
Then he rubbed his hands together with something from a jar.
I'll just touch it with this, he said.
He smiled at Catherine very happily and passed his hands lightly over her head. Catherine stood up and looked at herself very seriously in the mirror. Her face had never been so dark, and her hair was like the bark of a young white birch tree.
I like it so much, she said. Too much.
She looked in the mirror as though she had never seen the girl she was looking at.
Now we must do monsieur, the coiffeur said. Does monsieur wish to cut? It's very conservative, but it's also sportif.
The cut, David said. I don't think I've had a haircut in a month.
Please make it the same as mine, Catherine said.
But shorter, David said.
No, please, just the same.
When it was cut, David stood up and ran his hand over his head. It felt cool and comfortable.
Aren't you going to let him lighten it?
No, we've had enough miracles for one day.
Just a little?
No. David looked at Catherine and then at his own face in the mirror. His was as brown as hers, and it was her haircut.
You really want it that much? Yes, I do, David. Truly. Just to try it a little bit, please.
He looked once more in the mirror and walked over then and sat down. The coiffeur looked at Catherine.
Go ahead and do it, she said.
This ends Disc 2.